Raleigh, North Carolina. It's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone, welcome to The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
And I'm Jack.
That was the most...
And I'm Jacob.
Boring Jack I've ever heard in my life.
What was I was I supposed to come up with a name?
I don't know. But he's like, I'm Jack.
Well, we didn't watch any episodes, so what am I? I'm just Jack.
I don't know. I feel like more enthusiasm. We have Jacob here, our guest.
I'm lost in translation. How about that?
kind of let down by that one.
I know, right? I feel like we have a special guest, and he's kind of half-hearted on the beginning of the show.
Jack's just phoning in at this point.
I think so.
I mean, I'm literally phoning it in, but
nicely done. See, that's the kind of witty repartee that I'm looking for, Jack.
Let's go.
Again, I'm old, and I'm just phoning it in at this point.
let's welcome to the show Jacob Parr, visual artist extraordinaire. And for those listening at home right now that may or may not know, Jacob has been our lead visual artiste for the past a while now, right? Like four years.
It's been about 4 years, yeah.
Four or five years, somewhere around there.
I like past a while. That does say 4 years. You say past a while.
Yeah, because it's like a couple is two, several is three.
Past a while is four.
Yeah, it's well known. Well known.
I just want the people at home to understand what that is.
Well, and if it wasn't, it is now.
Exactly.
Right. It's sweeping the nation. It's going to be a hashtag. It's going to be trending on Twitter tomorrow.
Don't we have to see it tweeted twice? Is that the rule?
Yep. If it's on there twice, it's real.
So Jacob is here to kind of kick off our Summer of Lost. So with the summer coming around and less new TV shows to talk about, the Ramblecast will be coming back for its summer. It's our summer show, really. So Ramblecast will be coming back. Married Man Show will continue with our rotating guest hosts, which Jacob has actually given some of the best listener contributions to the show. So I'm not going to say anything more. It's been really fun. With our new rotating guest host since that guy left the show earlier in the year.
That guy.
But we've had a rotating guest host of Chris in Boston from Media Junkyard, Shut Up Tim from a crap ton of Survivor stuff, most namely The Tribe. And then we have Nick Dunn, who's from our Game of Thrones podcast, and then Brian Verderosa, who is from... something movies. I forget it off the top of my head. But he is a podcast as well.
Is that guy that left, is he the new Shelley Long?
He is. Yeah, he's the Shelley Long. He is, of our show anyway, or of our podcast productions. That's our rotating guest host with the Merry Man. It's been a lot of fun. So that's going to be our summer content. With the Summer of Lost, mainly what we're doing is generally every other week we'll have a new show with a new topic. Today's topic with Jacob's background is going to be around the iconography of Lost. Which will be a lot of fun. And then we'll also be releasing on the other week some classic Lost podcast episodes. So going back to maybe some of our favorite episodes.
But voted on the listeners, too. They can help vote.
Yes, we also have polls up on our patrons. I'll make it a patrons exclusive there. I think that's something worthwhile to our patrons, maybe.
There you go.
So definitely check out if you contribute at $5 or more on our Patreon page, you get a exclusive access to the Facebook group.
Wait, hold on a second. Five what? Dollars?
Dollars.
You were in New York. How long were you in New York?
I was actually in Massachusetts more than
Massachusetts.
New York.
Okay, that explains it.
But if you contribute at $5 or more, you get access to the exclusive members-only patrons Facebook group where you will vote on some of the classic Lost episodes that we re-release from the vault.
You also receive a members-only jacket.
No, not doing that. And spoiler alert, all of our episodes are accessible on our archives at jayandjack.com/lost. But anyway... Doesn't matter. We'll be re-releasing them. We'll spruce them up. I'll add some CGI dewbacks and stormtroopers, and they'll be real nice. Real nice.
They work for Star Wars.
So we'll have Jacob on this week. 2 weeks from now, as part of our, Actually, we still have to do the marathon part of it. But as part of our work to raise money for Make-A-Wish Foundation, we'll be having a special Lost Podcast interview with Jorge Garcia, in which we don't really talk Lost that much at all, but we get to catch up with Jorge and see what's going on in his world.
I try to push him on Star Wars.
That one was a fun conversation, a lot of fun, and it's all to raise money for Make-A-Wish Foundation. There'll be more info when we post that show. So Summer of Lost, if you like our Lost podcast, you're in for a treat.
if you don't like it, you're in
too bad.
You can just not listen. That's the beauty of pod. If you don't like it, you don't have to listen.
If you don't like it, you can just join that guy that left the Married Man show.
Wait, this is an option. I didn't have to be listening to it this whole time.
No. Oh crap! Maybe did we just reveal? We just lost half our listeners.
A lot of people thought it was mandatory.
But yes, and before we get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast, we want to thank people that make this show possible. Our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. Become a patron today and contribute to make this show possible. Things like hosting fees and Jack's talent fees, which are just exorbitant. Everything goes to everything here. Nothing is wasted of the animal. We need brains.
It's the scrapple of podcasting.
it all helps make these shows possible. So thank you to all of our patrons. If you'd like to become one today, contribute $1 to whatever you can contribute over at patreon.com/JayandJack. Or if you want it a little bit easier, if you just go to our website at jayandjack.com, click on the Become a Patron link, and become a patron today. All right, let's jump into our conversation here with Jacob today. For those that may or may not know, we talked about how he's done our graphics for a long time, so he's part of the Jay and Jack crew. But he also is one of the co-founders to Spar Games, in which you came up with this game with your kind of compatriot, compadre, Jake Spencer, and created a game called Master Thief, which got backed on Kickstarter like almost immediately. It was like crazy.
Yeah, we were fully funded within 5 days, which is insane.
That is
amazing. It was really cool. I'm a graphic designer. He's a writer, and we're just kind of trying to figure out something that we could do together. We've been best friends for a while, and we just wanted to have something that we could both do and maybe make some money. That wasn't even really the main goal at the time. We just wanted to, make something. We're very competitive. We are constantly trying to one-up each other. We named our company Spar not only because my last name is Parr, his is Spencer. We just kind of lazily smashed them together. But
I feel like one has more weight to it than the other name. Was that, subtly saying who's more important?
Well, we share the P, which...
Sound a little bitter about that.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, my full last name is in there. That was not wholly intentional, but Pencer just didn't really work. But it's... to spar an opponent, you associate that normally between two people to compete to make yourself better. That was the whole kind of idea behind this, is that we're going back and forth, not only being competitive but also making each other better through our games. And so that was just the loose idea. We came up with the idea for Master Thief, which for people, I guess people really wouldn't know. Master Thief is a card game where you're an art thief in a museum and you're trying to steal the most valuable works of art and escape without getting caught. And we put it up on Kickstarter, had a video, had the whole thing, which the whole Kickstarter process is just a bear. It's really rough. It really becomes a full-time job really fast.
Was it difficult, or is there, when you're doing that on Kickstarter, is there the fear that you're going to kind of oversell yourself in terms of like what you're offering?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, to be like completely frank, which is what we've been trying to do the whole time with our backers on Kickstarter, is that, I'm 25, he's 26. We're just, two guys. We had an idea, which is kind of, the norm on Kickstarter, but we wanted to be very clear that we're just you know, we don't have a huge like experience doing games. We really wouldn't even consider ourselves like huge gamers. But we came to it like very humble to make sure that everyone knew that we're not, you know, professionals, but we're going to figure it out, and we were going to make sure that we get this idea to become a reality. So we assumed that we were going to be asking a lot. We asked for $15,000, which is the bare minimum that it would require for us to get the game produced, mm-hmm. and we ended up raising $47,000.
That's just incredible.
So did you guys go on like some crazy bender or something like that?
If only. We were counting down the seconds on the clock on the Kickstarter campaign at a local bar, and we just toasted, and we put the bar tab for that night, which was, I mean, it was like $30 to be perfectly honest. It was not much, but
$30 on a bar tab, that's like one drink in some cities.
Drinks are on me.
Oh no, I know, that's one of the beauties of being here in Toledo.
Yeah, is that the Toledo discount there? That's pretty good.
Yeah, we're. Things are not really too expensive here, so we're feeling good about that. And but yeah, we were like, you know what, we're gonna put this on the company card.
Nice, awesome.
Celebrating. Yeah, it's been a ride since then. It's been crazy.
That's awesome. And then, so for baby people that are home right now, where can people? Is it still on Kickstarter? Are you guys are you in retail stores? So what's the way they get it now?
So it's up for pre-order right now. You can still go to the Kickstarter page if you Google search Kickstarter Master Thief, or you can go to spargames.com. We have the link right there. It'll take you to a website called BackerKit. Essentially, BackerKit is kind of a third-party sequel to Kickstarter. They compile all the data that we need to get the games to where they need to go. And that's available now. It's being produced right now. It's actually overseas in production as we speak, but it's just a slow moving process. There are a lot of hoops to jump through.
I bet the shipping part alone would make me insane just thinking about it.
Oh, it's crazy. Well, now here's the cool thing. So this is what we've been running around bragging about this because we're super excited. We actually partnered up with the people at Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Yeah, fine. That was our reaction, too. I ended up meeting...
Well, that's kind of a grassroots game that started as well, right? Because that was like almost you printed your own cards, right? Has it started out?
Right. They were just doing a print and play. Now, they're all the same. They were graphic designers. They weren't gamers. They were graphic designers and writers that thought this was a fun idea. They put it up on Kickstarter. They raised $4,000 on Kickstarter. That was their first campaign.
Wow.
Was $4,000 on Kickstarter. And I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd have to check, but I'm pretty sure that Cards is the number one selling game in the world. I would probably say, I don't know, maybe just the US, but it's huge.
Yeah. Massive. And
yeah, absolutely. So, Twist of Fate, while the Kickstarter campaign for Master Thief was running, I had to go to a conference, design conference in New Orleans, and I was in a competition with this girl who ended up winning the whole thing. She's the lead designer at Cards Against Humanity. And we connected, swapped information. Turns out that Master Thief is spinning off another company called Black Box, which takes care of the warehousing and shipping for independent gamers.
Oh, wow.
So,
now, did this girl turn out to be your cousin?
Yeah, right.
Those that have no idea what's going on right now, that's a Married Man episode. Check it out. It's the first one with Chris in Boston.
Believe
continue.
I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised. But we connected. They're just, you know, Cards Against Humanity is based out of Chicago, which is just a 4-hour drive for us. And we had a couple meetings, and they brought us on as a client. And so now when the game is actually done being produced, it'll come back to the States and go straight to the warehouses that Cards Against Humanity uses.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic, which is great because we basically, their whole focus is they want us to keep being creative and just make more because it's a great business model. We make more games, they make more on the warehousing and shipping of those games. So it's kind of a win-win for everyone, I think.
Nice.
Well, congratulations. Yeah.
And then hopefully you just sell it to those guys for like a bajillion dollars, and then
exactly.
you buy the biggest house in Toledo, and you live that sweet life.
Or do you move out of Toledo?
You know, I've got a lot of Toledo pride. I there are a lot of people that come out of this town that are really eager to just fly away. And what I always say, it's, you know, in a small town like this, you're kind of on the base level of the city, so you can start something from scratch and build it up to be successful. Whereas in other bigger cities, you know, you go to New York, you go to Chicago, whatever, you're building on top of what other people have already built up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So here you kind of, you have more of an opportunity to make a name for yourself and really make a huge impact on the city. So it's, I don't know, that is intriguing to me, and maybe I'll grow out of that and realize that I could be making more money in New York or Chicago, but that remains to be seen.
Well, the thing that's one of the...
But you pay a lot more.
Exactly. You make more, but you pay more, so it kind of means out.
Right. Yeah, no, I've got an apartment that is $400 a month rent, and it's a nice... Yeah, I know, exactly. That's one of the beauties about being here.
You can't even get that in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
Raleigh's about double that, probably. We're a decent apartment.
Oh, it's probably more than that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just seeing it kind of from the early stages, you know, even I think we were just talking to us about it, and seeing where it is now, it's incredible, and we're very proud of what you've accomplished, because it's just awesome.
Yes.
And excited that we can say we knew you when you were helping us make graphics for our podcast.
and yeah. Now you should be able to get a date without a without your relative.
Well, if you listen to his most recent call into the married man, starting a new relationship. If you follow Jacob on not Instagram, Facebook, he has changed his relationship status.
Yeah, that was a tough question.
It's official.
Facebook official. Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that you should talk about on the married man. I don't know why the Facebook official carries so much weight, but it really does. It does. Stirs up a lot of trouble.
Call it in for next week's show. That's a good one. It's a good topic of discussion.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are here to talk Lost, and what's great about having somebody with Jacob's background in design and the artsy fartsies, if you will, the technical term. something Jacob's a big fan of Lost, like all of us, so this is the show, and Jack and I, but he really kind of wanted to dig into the kind of the iconography of Lost. Like, Lost from like a visual standpoint just had some actually, I'm gonna let the person that understands more about this than I do explain it, but Jacob, what to you is the kind of that Lost iconography when we kind of start digging into these?
Yeah, so the way I see it is there are certain things in all the TV shows that we love that you can pull out of it and have it sit and exist without any context, and you can relate it back to that show. I know maybe it kind of makes the show itself, quote, iconic. That's kind of been how I explain it. I know I'm probably using it wrong. It should be technically that should be called a sign in what we learn in graphic design, but I really don't care. it makes sense to me to call an iconic show iconic because there are certain things in it that are recognizable outside of the show. So one good example that I like to use is the blue meth in Breaking Bad. So very iconic. It's you relate that back instantly to Breaking Bad. If you have a birthday party with like little blue rock candy, you immediately can relate that right back to Breaking Bad. But these are things that are entirely intentional. The people who are creating the shows are making these visual choices on purpose to stick in your memory and create a long-lasting effect for the viewers. So, you know, pure meth is not, in my experience, it's not blue. I mean, people have like gone on about how in Breaking Bad's inconsistent with the science because it's not supposed to be blue. They purposefully made it blue to make it iconic for the show so that it's exclusively to the show and makes a longer lasting icon, I guess. Mm. Yeah, that's the idea. I hope that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Because there's something about when somebody puts care into the kind of the icons of whatever thing is, whatever thing of media has. Like if you think for Captain America, it's that shield. It's that circular shield, yeah. You know, or
right, exactly.
Ghostbusters, the No Ghost logo. It's just something that mm-hmm. without any context, you understand exactly what it is, exactly where it comes from. It becomes something even sometimes bigger than what it actually is, like maybe the Coca-Cola logo. Like the Coca-Cola right. logo evokes so like emotions and feelings and all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff, and it's just a soda, you know, it's just a sugared water. But yeah,
there goes our Coke advertisement.
Yeah, sugared water.
Sugar. It's just sugared water.
What's that? That's that famous what Steve Jobs thing when he was trying to entice the CEO of Pepsi, John Sculley, to come to be the CEO of Apple. He's like, do you want to be known for selling sugar water, or do you want to be known as the guy that changed the world? Whatever, something like that.
Crazy.
What's it pay?
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
That's how I want to be known as.
The guy that got paid?
The guy that got paid, yeah.
I don't want to say that you failed in your life if that was your goal.
Well,
but
I'm just saying, and that's how I wasn't that guy though. I would say, I want to be the guy that's known for making change in the world.
Here lies Jack.
I want to be known as that poor guy that changed the world.
No, you can be the person that changed the world and have a lot of money, like Steve Jobs changed the world. Yes,
I took the wrong route. I'm not ruthless.
What are you gonna say, Jacob?
Oh, I was going to say, I think Steve Jobs did have a lot of money, though. You know, I think if you're going to do that, I'd say, you know, Gandhi changed the world, did not have money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I was saying, I was using Steve as a case example that you could have both. You could have both.
Oh, so who's more famous, Steve Jobs or Gandhi?
Gandhi.
Steve Jobs.
You say Steve Jobs more than Gandhi?
Probably now. But I think most people, I don't know about
this. Well, here's the thing. Like, say in India that, really... national treasure, and there's a billion people in India, so yeah. I feel like just the amount of people alone, plus
just India alone would just be
that's what I'm saying, plus Gandhi's influence outside of India. I think
like,
Gandhi's
like,
more
you're asking a kid and he's got an iPhone and he's looking and you're looking at me, oh, I guess I gotta say Gandhi.
But here's the thing, like kids have maybe a $10 bill. Actually, no, Hamilton's pretty popular right now. They have a $20 right. bill in their pocket. And, you know, are they going to really know who Andrew Jackson is? No, not really.
No, I'm talking about in India. The people, I'm sure most people in India should know who Gandhi is.
Or is that something that, like, we like, in our American elementary schools, like, we put more importance on Gandhi than they do in India? Is that possible? Because I feel like that happens a lot, too.
Really? I mean, it could be.
I mean, kids today don't even know who George Washington is.
Yeah, exactly. So I bet you would get a different answer depending on who you ask.
Well, yeah, it might be too. Just like what Gandhi stood for is similar, well, to a certain extent, principles of that kind of
replay that, put the movie back in the circulation.
Which movie?
Gandhi.
Oh, Gandhi with
Ben Kingsley.
Kids would go to the movies. Oh, that's who that is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then we can play, you know, any of the several Steve Jobs movies that have come out recently.
Those have been hits.
I feel bad because the Michael Fassbender movie I thought was pretty good. I thought that was actually pretty good, but it just... Anyway, we're getting sidetracked here.
So sidetracked. Sorry, actually, I was going to say, it's funny that you brought up the Ghostbusters logo. So that was going to be... That's another one of the good examples. Fake logos in movies is a huge thing. I'm like... super obsessed with that because you find them on t-shirts, you find them on anywhere on the internet. Between the Ghostbusters logo, if you think about the Rebel Alliance and the Empire, like very iconic. And back to Lost, you think about like the Oceanic logo is something that is made specifically for the show and meant to be different, but kind of playing on the existing airline logos that we have today, so it seems real still.
And even more so, the Dharma logo, where like a Dharma symbol is like a religious symbol, but there's a lot of people that see that just like from the spiritual context of it, and they go, oh, hey, it's the Lost logo. It's like,
exactly, yeah. Oh, believe me, we will get to that.
good.
Yeah.
The Oceanic logo, like, it'll show up sometimes, and I love how they kind of show another movie sometimes where it's just kind of be on a billboard or something. Hey, it's the Oceanic logo.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it's been on Once Upon a Time a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like Pixar movies do, you know, the gas station.
Yeah, Pizza Planet. Or Dinoco as well, yeah.
Dinoco, it repeats itself. Pizza Planet repeats itself constantly. But, you know, someone had to design the Pizza Planet logo and the look of that so that it is recognizable across these different platforms. So, I don't know. I think that's a lot of fun. Maybe it's just me. To me, it's a super interesting and fun thing to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that, again, it's like when a show is, it kind of goes from that level of good to great, like there mm-hmm. is that time and care put into those types of details, right? The details exactly. that kind of have a show create a lasting impact, kind of
right.
Like
I think that shows that should be deemed iconic are the ones that are that have that, you know. Yes. Think about A Drop of Blood on a Glass Slide. You would think about Dexter.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Exactly. Or even something as mundane as a glass of scotch and a pack of Lucky Strikes.
Yeah, Mad Men. Yeah,
Mad Men.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and those are things that are not, you know, even specific to the show, but they've kind of taken ownership of it and made it iconic for the show itself.
Yeah.
And Lost is one of the most iconic shows. And maybe it's just because I dove so deep into the show when it was on, but it was extremely iconic. There is so much that can be pulled out of it. And I would like to know more. I want to know whose decision it was to do all these things, but there's so much you can pull out of it. So that's kind of my top five is the top five icons of Lost.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, excited to see your picks and kind of the reasons why you picked these as the top five icons. And I wonder if maybe I will have different ones or Jack might have different ideas about that. But let's jump into it. What's are you going to go from like level of importance? Or are they just kind of five? There's no, you know.
I arranged my five in level of importance. This is just what I see as the most influential five icons. And I go from like bottom to top.
So we're going 5-2, 5-4-3-2-1.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go with number five.
That
number
would be five. Top. That would be bottom to top 5-4-3.
Yeah,
two.
I know. I just
starting from the bottom.
Can you explain for those people out there that may not know who.
Well, Gandhi actually, is? If you think I'm starting from the bottom, it could be one because you're that's the bottom, and you're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five is on the top.
No, that's never the bottom.
How about started from the left and now we're going to the right?
There we go. How about started from the bottom, now we're here?
Now we're here.
Started from the bottom, now the whole... Is it game?
Anyway. Stop while you're behind.
All right. So, number five, the one I've got, it's completely stopped on that one. Black and white. The theme of black and white throughout the show is extremely iconic. So I guess if you wanted to get specific, you could talk about the black and white stones that they find in the little pouch in the caves.
Yeah,
right. So
the theme of black and white is extremely iconic for the show. It's used throughout the entire six seasons, and it's even pushed further towards the end when you get to Jacob and the man in black. And it's seen all over. The opening credits is... you know, a wash of black with the white logo, except for when in season 5, when it's the reverse of that.
Yep.
The black and white stones, backgammon, when Locke has that. Yeah, even like the countdown clock in the hatch is black and white until it goes to the hieroglyphics. So that's my number five. I think that one is, it plays throughout so much of the show. I think that my favorite use of this is some of the more subtle ones that they hide in, which, you know, is clearly intentional. I think my favorite mundane one is when Sawyer realizes he has to get glasses, and they pin two different lenses together. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
One of the frames is white and one of the frames is black. And it was just... it was a completely mundane, really not that important prop, but they chose to do to carry over the theme of white and black into something as simple as that. So I don't know, some cool dedication.
I wonder
there.
If somebody was in, like you were saying, is was somebody just in charge of going, okay, we're gonna make this black and white on this,
right?
Well, I mean, who would have thought the glass? I didn't even pay attention.
What I think maybe just that's the most contrast that you can get, so it makes it funnier. Mm-hmm. Could be the one side of it, but it also. Like the to your point on black and white kind of being an iconic part of this show is that in the end it's like man of science versus man of faith, evil
exactly.
versus good,
right?
You know, it's this two different ideas about what life is, and like the show struggles. I think it's something that Damon Lindelof has in all of his shows. Where it's mm-hmm. just this struggle between faith and science. It's something that he does like in all of his, like, you know, Prometheus, mm-hmm. Leftovers, Lost. It's something that he digs into a lot, which might just be his own personal things that he likes to go or at least explore. But no, I think that's a good call out there.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's really taking these. You know, kind of abstract struggles, you know, the struggle between good and evil or yep. man of science, man of faith, and dwindling it down to two colors, which is just a super abstract way of thinking. But the fact that they carry it over, you know, throughout so much of the show is super cool. It's actually, this is extended into what Jake and I do with our games and
stuff. Well, I was just going to say, because your email is... Can I say it on the show? Does that matter?
Yeah.
So, like, you're white at Spar Games, and he's black at Spar Games, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, we're two different sides. He's, you know, in our branding, our business cards and stuff. Our business card on one side is white. It's got my name on it. On the other side, it's black. It's got his name, and we push the idea of the good guy, the bad guy kind of vibe. But I'm the good guy, and he would say that he's the better guy, which to me, I think he's just the bad guy. But so we've adopted that as like a callback to Lost, because we love Lost, and that was something that we watched when it was on, and it was very influential for us. So we've kind of adopted the black and white thing. I think it's super important, and.
There's no greater, you know, difference in the, because it's what white is the appearance of all colors and black is the absence of all colors, right? Mm-hmm. So there's nothing more kind of on the opposite ends of the spectrum, if you will. So it's a good parallel to those philosophical struggles that are part of the show. And it's that whole, you know, yin and yang is that you know, part of it's black, part of it's white. So again, it's just to your point, it's just a combination of colors sets the tone for what the entire show explores. Which it seems so simple, but right. It does add so much to it.
Well, so the best answers are often the simplest ones. So. Yeah. Do you guys have any, like, I mean, again, I know this is like an abstract kind of topic, but do you guys have any instances that you can remember from the show that's showing the contrast of black and white that like sticks out for you?
I think you mentioned for me that.
No, but I want to go back and watch the show now and start looking. I won't be able to watch the show now without going back and seeing looking for every scene black and white.
Well, because right. There is
because that's what I do. Someone brings up, and I go, you know, I really didn't pay. I, you know, the things you mentioned, but the glasses, I didn't pay attention to that.
Well, I always thought it was kind of plain with some of a lot of the Dharma food and stuff is just a stark black and white.
Oh yeah,
like every product is a stark black and white.
But you think about it, it's supposed to be just a generic, but it is black and white.
And all the Dharma logos are like, hey, there be ones like different colors. Like, no, it's all black and white. At least when they're showing them. The composition notebooks that they're writing on, the classic kind of black and white composition notebooks.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, you definitely see it a lot, and it's something that necessarily Lost didn't originate. You know, with Darth Vader, he's just this very tall, imposing, all in black, and he's kind of just this. You know, back then, at least before they kind of made him a whiny baby, he was this kind of like scary, imposing figure.
right, and then in contrast to that, you've got Luke, who in A New Hope basically wore, you know, white-ish robes. Yeah. You know, so.
But even then, I think it was in a comic where like Darth Vader turned good, or was he was in total white. Have you heard about that? It's kind of it's trippy. Where I think it's either he turned to the good side or he was always on the good side. But this was the suit that he wore still. So it was Darth Vader, but it was completely white. It's like Snow White. And it was it kind of just looking at Darth Vader like that, it changes. It almost changes your perception of the character.
I just Google imaged it, and it makes him way less terrifying.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah,
so I was like, I want to give him a hug. Maybe not that much, but
you don't hug Vader,
right? Great, So, and
good number five.
That's the number five. I think it's a number five mainly because even though it was extremely important, it's not something that they necessarily originated, but they definitely perpetuated it throughout the show. So
yeah.
Number four icon of Lost for me is the polar bears.
Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. So again, it's lower because polar bears, they exist out in nature, as far as I know. For now,
currently,
I've seen them at the zoo.
If you watch those World Wildlife Foundation commercials,
they'll tell you otherwise.
Yeah, with the Sarah McLachlan video or music playing in the background.
No, I can't watch those. No.
yeah. So. So the polar bears. Now, I try not to do too much research just because I wanted this to it defeats the purpose. The whole idea of icons is supposed to have these long lasting effects in your head.
What are the two colors of a polar bear? Black and white.
White. Yeah. There you go. See, even further. I was gonna say I think everything else on the list is black and white, but I'm wrong.
Okay.
Did you know, I looked up the polar bears were only in the show three times in the entire show.
Let's see. So the the second.
Walt coming up towards Sawyer.
Yep. That's pilot part two. Yep.
Yeah. So part two, attacking Walt.
Attacking Walt.
Yep, and that was special.
And when the donkey wheel, frozen donkey wheel. Well, it was a dead one. Did that count as the other one?
I didn't count the dead ones. I'm counting just when we actually saw the actual polar bears. The third and the last time we ever actually see them is in further instructions when Echo dies. So just those are the only three times that the polar bears ever actually are on screen. Now they're harkened back to so many other times. They're in the orientation film, on the comic book, and there's, I think, isn't there a stuffed polar bear at some point?
There is Walt's,
Michael's Walt one.
The season two episode, I believe, Adrift?
Yeah.
I think, yes. Dealing with those daddy issues. So the polar bears are harkened back to constantly. So they're playing off of their own icon. They know, and that's why it's so intentional. They knew that they did it. Putting a polar bear on a tropical island.
It was brilliant. Because I know when I'm first watching it, I'm like going, Jenna, I go, what? Mm-hmm. How could there be a polar bear on a tropical island? What is going on with this show?
Well, again, like if we're talking about opposites, right? A polar bear, which lives, in the North Pole or in cold air climates, is on a tropical island, right? It's very separate things. But also, like if there's one of the few things that people even just barely have a slight understanding of Lost.
They know the polar bears.
They know the polar bears. Like, that's right. There's polar bears on the island, right? Something like that.
Exactly. So now that's a big one because people immediately, if they don't know Lost, they know the polar bear.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So, but then you got like the frozen donkey wheel. You've got the collar that shows up in the desert.
Yep.
Things like that. So they play off it. They keep reminding us about the polar bears. I think that the polar bears also give us one of the best props, the fish biscuit.
Yes.
Yes. So and those, and the fish biscuit I think is in my honorable mentions, but I'm just linking it in with the polar bears basically.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no. Yeah, it's, do you have a full honorable mention list? Because I'd love to hear. Okay, cool.
Hopefully, you guys can add on to that because there's a lot of things. It was actually very hard. to make a top five of these.
Yes. But no, yeah, the polar bear cages, which for better or worse, that was kind of like almost another like parallel, at least for the viewer, of feeling like our characters were trapped and the story was going nowhere when they were stuck in the polar bear cages in the first part of season three. But
ever. Oh man, maybe we're spoiled now because we have such good, such good television now. But man, it felt like it took forever.
Well, because it's like Lost kind of had to. They kind of were trailblazers because it was a major network show, but it had the scope and the feel and the caliber and quality of some of the best things caught on film, you know? So right. It had to challenge that system of 24 episodes in a year, and it's serialized. It's not like Law and Order where none of them are really connected to each other. And so, yeah, I think so. There's some of those parts in this entire series that you could tell it was still fighting that system that it was kind of born into.
No, yeah, absolutely.
If you could go back in time and put it on cable, like if it's
and give it 10 episodes per season,
an HBO show.
Yeah.
Oh man, can you imagine? Oh, that'd be the best.
It'd be unreal. It'd be unreal.
I don't think it would have lost its viewership because I think people just got so tired. You know, there's some people just were impatient. I want an answer. Oh, they're just dragging it out, and they were, but they didn't have a choice. They didn't have a choice. They had to drag it out. But it, like you said. So is it 118 episodes, whatever it is, have 60 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it was, do you guys remember when they used to have, there was an actual website that was islostonthisweek.com? Like, because you never knew.
Yeah.
No.
It's going to actually be a new episode.
So season three, like that was the kind of, it was a mini season of 6 episodes, and then there was like 13 episodes or something like that. But that second half of that third season after those bear cages is some of the best episodes of Lost after A Stranger in a Strange Land, you know, of the show. I love the second half of season three after Stranger in a Strange Land. But then it went to, they knew their end date. They knew it was going to end at 6 seasons and then they could kind of go to their conclusion, and the show was better for it. And then people can argue the finale, but I think on the whole, the show is better for it. And it set the stage for other shows like Breaking Bad. The Walking Dead didn't heed Lost's warning. They have just, if you want to talk about a show stretching it out and dragging it on, they've been doing
Walking
it for
Dead,
5 years.
It's so successful. I mean, it has so many people watching it. It's a moneymaker, but they're killing it. Even though this season was a little better than...
The finale killed it for me, honestly.
Yeah, finale was... Well, the last few minutes... I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Well, a lot of people have sworn off the show. Like, a lot of people have sworn off the show after that finale.
Well, they'll say that, but they'll come back. Is what else is on?
So, there's a lot of stuff on.
They have lost viewers. I mean, it used to do like 15 million, 16 million. Now it's, I guess, down to 12, 13, which is kind of a drop. But still, for a cable show, that's pretty successful.
Right.
But they really do need to figure out a way. Hey, how are we going to wrap this thing up?
Yep. The polar bear, absolutely. But I see the number four there because polar bear is fairly known outside of Lost, but it definitely is very much an iconic part of it.
Yeah, for sure. So, polar bear. Number three is a prop, actually. It's the, for me, the Virgin Mary statues.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, see, now, that might not have made someone else's top five. For me, I have a weird thing where if I ever see a Virgin Mary statue outside of television, just in the world, I immediately assume that it's filled with heroin. So
it's not?
I mean, isn't that what they're supposed to be used for?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, no, it's crazy that that's another one, and they're very they're a very specific sculpted version of the Virgin Mary statue, specifically made for Lost, from what I understand. So
you're not going to find those in the wild, is what you're saying here.
Talk about with that one. That one's just kind of like maybe just as far as props go. That one's one that sticks out in my mind. You know, and it pushed a lot. It was referenced back to so many times, either and in different storylines. It wasn't just in Charlie's story. It was also in Echoes, and it was also in Boone's. It was in a lot of different storylines. So it kind of was another one of those things that interweaved everyone's lives together.
Yeah,
yeah, where John Locke got Boone killed.
Yeah. Oh man.
Rest in peace. Pouring out for our homies with Boone. But no, yeah, absolutely. It is an iconic looking prop. Absolutely. Like, it's just and as a prop that was a linchpin in so many plot points, and so many important plot points. It was kind of for all of us at home. We cheered when Charlie was able to kick his heroin habit. But the thing is, like, you know, once you're an addict, you're always an addict. So then once we saw, you know, Boone throw it down and it was filled with heroin, all of us immediately went, oh, no, there's heroin on the island. He quit it. Oh.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it.
And so, yeah, so, like, we knew this wasn't going to end well.
Well, and it's – I always thought it was weird. Not weird. I mean, very, I'm sure, intentional that the Virgin Mary was suddenly a symbol for temptation. Like, that's – oh, that's weird. That just makes me feel weird all over.
No, yeah. It's like if you're talking about polar opposites, right? I'm sensing a theme here in your picks for your icons. But you have the Virgin Mary, which is supposed to be this pure, as pure as an image can be, and then you have heroin, which from an opioid standpoint, I don't know if there's a dirtier, less pure drug out of the pyramid of drugs. I think that might be the worst one that's on that pyramid. So again, it's like these polar opposites being brought together to be this symbol on the show, or to be this thing on the show that moves the plot forward. So and it also kind of highlights Echo being a priest, even though he was a drug lord.
Such a great way to, like, weave those two worlds together in multiple different character storylines. I was always a big fan of that prop in particular, that decision, because it served such a great, you know, part of the story in the early seasons of Lost. So. Yeah, and it was a recognizable thing. If you saw it again in later seasons, it was, I don't know, loved it. Good stuff.
Like you said, any Lost fan that sees Virgin Mary statue thinks of heroin right away.
Right.
Or you can't help it.
Well, it might be that specific one, because I'm a Catholic, and if you go to New York, like, everybody has a Virgin Mary statue in the front porch. So it's like it kind of has to be a smaller Virgin Mary statue.
When I go
statue.
To New York, I think everyone's a heroin addict. Because I'm not Catholic, so I sit there just think, oh, heroin addict. I know. Don't try to hide it. I watch Lost.
Yes.
And for you Catholics playing at home, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, all in jest. It's all good fun, good solid fun.
Except some of you, I don't really know, but not.
So yeah, number three. Actually, I have a note to myself here that says to swap number three with number four. So pretend that polar bear was more important than the Virgin Mary statue.
Jay will go back and edit it.
Note right, to yeah. self.
Note to self, disregard previous note. Okay. So, mission accomplished.
So you take notes like me.
So I can't read them?
Exactly.
All right. So my number two icon in Lost is the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes.
Of course. I mean, that was something that they were hiding the numbers in the show before they even introduced the numbers as a plot point. It was that's something that is another one. Those specific numbers in that order, even outside of that order, if you see them outside in the real world and you're a Lost fan, you get a little jazzed.
Well, it's kind of this bad nerd tick. Because it's like if Colin and I are at a movie theater watching a movie and 23 shows up, 42, I'm like, hey, 23, that's one of the numbers.
Right. exactly. No, and we have to believe that we can't be the only people that do that. Like, you know, everyone who is a mega fan of Lost has got to have that same gut reaction.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll look at the clock and that it's 8:15 and be like, ah, it's
one of my biggest likes on Instagram was a receipt from Five Guys with the number 23 on it. I said, hey, 23. My wife looks at me like, uh huh. So I took a picture and put it on Instagram. It's one of the highest likes I've ever had.
And there's kind of a running joke for Jack and I. It's like when we were first doing the show, it was at the beginning of season two, and there was 108 was one of the numbers on there. Wow. And then the kind of phrase like, "Did you know if you added up all the numbers, it equals 108?" Oh my god!
We got email after email after email of that. So we just started saying, "Hey, you know, you add those numbers up." 108.
But yeah, just it became something far more than I think the show could ever explain or to ever make sense. I think it was eventually, like, with the Lost experience, it was like the Valenzetti equation was kind of their explanation for the numbers. But and honestly, it's more to me just like serendipity in a lot of ways, just something that somehow is in the universe and kind of appears a lot. And 23 has its own kind of existence outside of the fold numbers. I know Damon Lindelof was obsessed with the number 23, but there's a lot of people that are outside of the Lost circles. But beyond that, there's also, I think, a lot of iconography that's associated with the numbers, like you talked about the countdown clock.
That's the thing. The numbers is like a gateway to just a number of great moments, great props, great just little tidbits of Lost that were extremely iconic.
Yeah. So like, or when Hurley's going through the airport and there's like the girls' soccer team there and they have the numbers on their jerseys. Or the Apple II Plus, I found and over time pieced together the exact setup of that computer, which was an Apple III monitor. So the Apple III was a failed computer that was supposed to be the sequel to the Apple II that Steve Jobs made, and he hated fans, so he took the fan out of the computer. And the computer is fried, and they kept shutting down. But the monitor was a bigger monitor, and it sat on this little stand. And that's,
you know, can I say something? Gandhi wouldn't have made that mistake.
Sure, you're right. and so like that monitor on the stand within the Apple II Plus, like it's just an iconic looking computer that associates with Lost in a lot of ways. So I have one because of that, because I think it's just something that represents Lost in a lot, or at least season two.
But
like you mentioned, Jacob, if you rewatch season one, even before we really find out about the numbers, they're saying 4, they're saying 15. Uh-huh. You really didn't pay attention the first time around.
It wasn't until like Hurley's episode, right? That it was kind of hit us over the head.
But they did it before that, though. You're like going,
oh yeah, yeah.
It's like 4 weeks, like eight months or whatever. You're like going, what? I don't know the exact lines, but when I rewatched it again, I was like, oh, they were pushing these numbers on us right from the beginning.
Yep.
Oh yeah. I mean, the Oceanic 8:15 Gate 23, all those little things that were completely not important in any way. They just decided to have a little fun. I think to me, the numbers were almost an invitation for fans to look closer, which is what we all did. You know, when it was on, we were nitpicking the shows like just bit by bit, frame by frame. And to me, the reason why the numbers are so iconic is not just what they did to the story of Lost, but also how they engaged the fans. It was just an open invitation to come take a closer look, which I think is a brilliant thing that the showrunners and the people there did.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great pick. Great pick for number two.
And number one, which is probably no surprise at all. As a graphic designer, I'm a huge logo nerd, and number one for me is the Dharma logo, because it doesn't get more iconic than that for Lost.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys hit on it really early on with the Lost podcast, having the iPod inside of the Dharma logo. The Dharma logo was something that was extremely malleable. You could use it and make it something of your own, change it up, and it would still be a Dharma logo. and it would still relate back to Lost, you know. So
it's, yeah, I don't want to say that we started that trend, but I think we did. And I got to credit Ralph for that one. That was Ralph's idea. He yeah. came with the first sketch of it, but uh-huh. we made it that a big deal. So
well, I was looking at there's the I think yeah it's the Lostpedia the Wikipedia thing.
Yes, Lostpedia. There's a yeah.
thing about it that says fan made Dharma logos. I was giving it a look, and there's just like I'm. You keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. There's so many because people just wanted to adapt it, make it their own. But it's no matter what they do to it, it still will automatically be associated back to Lost. And actually, the iPod logo is on this list. So right below Dharma Lars.
What? Oh, man. but
I know the exact logo is on someone else's Twitter account, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our Twitter account. Someone else's Twitter account.
No, if the Dharma Lars are on there, that's fine. Because again, Ralph, he came up with the logo.
No, so I'm not happy about it.
You're not happy? Okay.
Nope. I'm gonna make a call.
It's again, it's just a Google. One of their offices is Lost themed in New York.
Really?
And they have, yeah, they gave out stickers. Like, they have Dharma logo stickers, but it's like Google in the middle of the Dharma logo. And
you mean their whole office is still Lost related?
Yeah, it's like one. So, like, usually when Google will make an office, each floor will have a theme of some sort. Yeah. Usually it'll be, like, based upon, like, where it's located. So, say, if you're in, or at least the Atlanta one, there's things related to the Atlanta movie industry and the music industry. So there's different rooms named different things, and they have different things on the wall that kind of represent whatever that is. So they had a lost floor that was all Lost stuff.
Can the general public go visit it?
No, I think you need to be like invited by a Google employee. So when I go to New York next, I'll go check it out. And
well,
I'll
how about
how cool
inviting someone that you know?
Yeah, I guess I have some friends in New York I'd probably invite. When I'm up
okay.
there.
All right.
But again, it's just like that logo above all else, I think is something that people will see and think about Lost.
Sure.
And it'll be on t-shirts and all that kind of stuff, like you were saying.
Yeah, I used it for the design for the 10th anniversary thing. And
yeah.
It's you pull it out. No matter what you do to it, you alter it, and it still is recognizable back to Lost. The logo itself, you know, again, kind of back to fake logos in movies and TV, Ghostbusters and so on. That's essentially what the Dharma logo is, and they could have, you know, phoned it in on that one, where they just, you know, come up with a generic logo for the scientific community on the island, but they had to have poured a lot of thought into it, because like you were saying, it's generally the actual Dharma, you know, design is based in spirituality, but it's a scientific organization. So now you've already, with just the slogan,
I know, right?
You've got the contrast of man and faith, or faith and science.
Yep.
And it's black and white. They captured the entire essence of their show in the logo of this fake company in their show.
Yeah.
It's so, like, I don't know, super exciting for me, because I like to think that I will hopefully one day create a logo that has just as much meaning for something. And it's not even a real logo. It's fake. It's crazy how much thought got put into that. And it was extremely successful, in my opinion. I think that they nailed it. They created something that it was bigger than the show itself. You know, it went beyond and outside of the TV. And so, yeah, I could geek out over that all day. But then it also, you know, it translates to the different applications. You've got the Dharma beer, the food drop at the hatch, all the different hatches. You know, every time you discovered a new hatch, it came with a new logo, and it was always super exciting when we finally had another one. You know, the flame, the orchid, all these things. So I thought that was that's my number one icon for Lost, in the sense that it, you know, encapsulates the entire show with one little mark, and it also pushed the story forward probably better than any other iconic thing that you could find in the show. So
yeah, I don't think it's hard to argue that something would be more iconic than that. Absolutely. Great pick for number one. Great thoughts about the logo too, and kind of what it represents with the good or science and faith and you know, and spirituality, and just it's something that definitely is something you find on t-shirts.
Well, I mean, I hope that someone put that much thought into it, because it's gonna be really awkward when I find out that this was just something that they threw together and it just happened to be perfect. But
well, it's, you can kind of maybe get that once, but to have that many things be able to kind of be on theme and on point,
right?
Then it tells me that thought was put into it. You know,
like
a lot of thought,
you can get lucky once, maybe twice.
A lot of thought was put into this show.
Yeah,
I mean, so there's no way this was an accident,
right? Whether or not they knew exactly what was going to happen in every single episode when they started out, that's one thing. But the fact that so much care was put into the mythology of the show, and the iconography being a big part of that. So, yeah, no, that's an awesome top five list. Now I want to get into your honorable mentions, the things that were awesome but couldn't quite crack the top five.
Yeah, and a lot of these are props, and I'd love to see if you guys have anything that maybe I missed, maybe something that stuck out for you guys that I didn't quite touch on. So honorable mentions for the Jesus stick.
Oh, of course.
Oh, Jesus stick, yeah.
I wrote a song about the Jesus stick.
The stick, Jesus stick. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, that's one. I found it harder to get, I think they got less iconic the more they, the seasons went on. But in season six, one of the most iconic things was the squirrel baby.
Oh, yeah. The scary squirrel baby.
Yeah.
Don't tell me how to raise my squirrel baby. I made him myself.
Just
crazy Claire.
I think I mentioned the Oceanic logo. That was good. Yep. Logos in general could be an honorable mention. You've got the Ajira logo, the Hanso Foundation, kind of, it was outside of Lost, but Widmore, things like that.
Widmore, right.
Yeah. An iconic moment, but visual moment. This probably should have been in my top five, but Not Penny's boat on the hand.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's
you see it all the time. People on Facebook have something written on their hand,
and they like put it up on a glass, and they kind of look in, you know.
Yeah,
look with those eyes that tell you they're about to die.
Yep.
Yeah.
Locke's knives, his knife collection in the briefcase. The briefcase, whatever the case may be.
Yep.
And the key around Jack's neck.
Love the key around Jack's neck.
Right. And I guess also keys in general. There's the key around his neck, the key that Desmond uses to there's a failsafe, things like that. Yep. So that's what I have in my honorable mentions here. I'm barely touching on
it's another numbers thing, but Hurley's lotto ticket.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Major prop they've made a whole bunch of times. The McCutcheon whiskey.
That came back a bunch of times.
What about that handcuff on Jin's arm? Forever.
Yes. And, I mean, that was a majority of the first season, right?
Yeah. That was part of my big pet peeve. Get that off his wrist.
The drive shaft logo, which was part of his ring.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
the ring.
Good one, Jay.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it went really bad. I was just thinking the trebuchet for some reason, but I think it's just I wanted to say trebuchet. mouse trap to me was just like just the way they shot that scene when they're kind of showing, and it represents Locke kind of getting snared in by his biological father and the con getting set and him setting up the mouse trap.
Always getting trapped over and over again.
So I
not learning. He's playing the game, but not learning from the game. Is that what you're saying, Jay?
Sorry, you were running over Jacob. What he was saying. What were you saying, Jacob?
No, I was just saying that. Yeah, it's I think I was just more or less agreeing like that. That was a big icon for John's story specifically.
Another one is the gold Bonneville, the car that kept showing up.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't give two craps about a gold Bonneville, but like that show made it relevant to a certain extent.
Or Locke's red bug, right?
Yeah, the red bug. Yeah.
Yeah, the red bug.
I don't know how this wasn't on my mention, but the white bunny with the black eight.
Oh, yes.
That came back a couple times. I think it was just white rabbits. White rabbits were a thing throughout the entire show.
Wasn't there a rabbit with 15 on it? Or am I just dreaming?
There was multiple rabbits.
There was a bunch of rabbits.
Well, I guess that goes without saying there's multiple rabbits.
But again, black and white, right? The black number on the white rabbit.
There you go, yeah.
They had the through the looking glass. I think wasn't one of the first episodes in the season called White Rabbit? Or
you're correct.
Yes, it was, yeah.
The first true Jack flashback episode.
Right.
Now
the shoes hanging on the
shoes on the in the bamboo,
right? Yeah.
Also, you can't mention Locke's bug without the Dharma van. Just that.
Oh, the Dharma van. I mean, hugely iconic.
Absolutely. And what's kind of cool about that, and I assume this is why it was done, but it's the same color, and I think just about same make as the Libyan terrorists van in Back to the Future.
Right. Right.
Because it's
that can't be an accident.
It can't be.
No, because everything that related back to Hurley kind of related back to the fans and the taste that, you know, the movies that we watched and things like that. You know, he was constantly making Star Wars references. Even in the finale when he says, "I've got a bad feeling about this," you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it all. It all, yeah. So that was, you know, kind of pulling, if you will, it pulls iconography from other things that we love, and but I think they really only did that with Hurley.
Generally he was like the voice of the fans, right? So that makes sense.
Exactly.
But even more so, like the whole Dharma van, we really got to see it closely was kind of when they went back in time and all the time travel stuff that went on with the show. So it kind of tied it in also with. Time travel back to the future. And there's that great scene between Hurley and Miles Strom where they're kind of arguing like time travel and like what kind of time travel is going on. God, what else? I mean,
about Locke's wheelchair?
Locke's wheelchair, yeah.
You're sitting there because it meant so much after you found out the backstory. It's like, what?
Well, anytime you saw a wheelchair, you know, past that, or if Locke encountered one at all, like it was a moment.
Yeah,
it took a second, you know.
Right.
You also have, we're talking about logos, the Apollo candy bar logo.
There we go. I knew I was missing a logo.
Which was just in an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, he was eating candy bars. Andy Samberg's character, Jake.
You know, I wonder if. I wonder why more people aren't watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's one of the funniest shows.
It's hilarious.
It's so good. I don't think I've seen an episode that I didn't like.
Well, even Grindr, which got canceled, good.
I'm angry.
It's so good. But yeah, there's a lot out there. And even I think there was some of like the generic food things. I think were Let's Chips in there at any point. I don't know. Do you know about Let's Chips, Jacob?
Is it
L-E-T, S, but basically it looks like Lay's, but it's just like a brand that TV shows and movies use to be a generic, and you just see them everywhere. But so it's kind of become a thing, these
where
chips.
It kind of goes through. Well, I mean, they do the same thing with the brand of cigarettes from the X-Files, if I'm thinking correctly, whatever those were.
They made fun of it on Community a lot, but
another. What about show. Darmalars? Was it Darmalars or? Malamars. It was Darmalars.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. God.
Second rate podcast was named after.
I mean, and you could go on forever. There's so much. Whether it's a prop or whether it's just. You know, a moment like the, you know, Not Penny's Boat or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
The submarine or just the hatches in general, the look of the hatches and everything. There's so much to it. So it kind of it all comes together to strengthen what I try to make as an argument is that Lost is an iconic show. And a show that has these kind of elements is going to make it more memorable and hopefully, I would assume more successful to the viewers. And the shows that don't have this kind of direction or don't take the care and the time to have these little details, it's just they're forgotten throughout time, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's the loose idea that I've been pushing, but.
Nice. Awesome. No, that's, I think on the whole, I think you brought up a great point. You know, Lost is iconic. And it's those images, those logos, those designs that, back that up, you know, to back up that play. So, Jacob, really appreciate you, coming on the show today, talking about your top five, iconic things from Lost, what I'd love to hear is the people at home. You know, it's okay if you disagree with Jacob. What are your top five lists here? You know, what's your top five?
Because we had to have missed something that's important, and I'm sure that everyone has their own. You know, like I was saying, for me, the Virgin Mary statue stood out in my head.
Yep.
But that's probably not nearly as important to someone else as maybe the computer in the hatch or you know?
So, yeah, call in and say, you know, argue your case. Why do you think something else is more important? I think, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I think it'll be a lot of fun to have on the next show that we do.
It's something that people don't even think about either. Like you're saying, this show, Lost took so much care. Most shows just a throwaway. But
right,
they actually,
exactly.
You know, talking about it, they actually took the time to think about it and make it relevant to the show. It wasn't just, we're going to put this in here so you can think. It was throughout the show, and that's what made Lost so special.
Right. And you could, you know, see that most of the decisions, you know, from my, you know, perspective as, you know, in the, you know, design world when I'm looking at things like that, that's the kind of stuff that's important to me, that's relevant, that I try to push into my work, is how do you make something that is relevant like that and stands the test of time and makes an impact. And I think that Lost is, to me, one of the most iconic shows and does that super successfully.
Because there's another show out there, and I won't mention it. It has a few Lost writers. I watched it for the first couple of seasons, but they put a lot of Lost stuff in there. And I used to complain about, it's your show. Get your own thing.
Right.
Stop trying don't piggyback on Lost. Get your own thing.
And I can't think of anything that is iconic in that show, honestly.
I know some people love it, but to me, I just got, you know, okay, the Apollo candy bar is 10 times bigger than it was on Lost. So we went different. I just went, I think that's when I said, okay, I'm done.
Right.
And as we're kind of wrapping up here, Jacob, is the Ghostbusters logo the greatest movie business, fake business logo of all time?
It might just be. I think that if anything was going to give it a run for its money, it would be Jurassic Park.
Ah, you're right. That's a pretty good one, too.
Yeah. To be actually, funny thing about, so the Jurassic Park logo, you know, it's the logo for the movie, but it's also the logo for the park inside the movie.
Yeah.
That came out in 93. I was born in 90. So I kind of, you know, from like 5 and up, I was watching Jurassic Park. It was my favorite movie as a kid. And I was constantly redrawing the little dinosaur skeleton on the logo. That I didn't realize at the time, looking back on it, I do, that I was more interested in drawing logos and creating logos just with pen and ink than I was with painting pictures of people or drawing people or anything like that. And so I think, I don't know, it's just a funny realization to realize that the Jurassic Park logo is probably responsible for why I was at a so early able to become a graphic designer, you know?
Oh.
Just a weird thing, but
no, it's
Jurassic Park over Ghostbusters.
are they using that logo, the Ghostbuster logo, in the new movie?
They are.
Okay.
For better or worse. Yeah,
which, Did you have you guys talked about that yet? I know it's a hot topic right now.
We talked about it on our kind of summer preview on the most recent Patron's Choice podcast. We talked about the Ghostbusters reboot. Man,
I think I've got to listen to that then. Yeah, I won't make you repeat it. But
no, yeah,
I can preview really quick. They should have stopped at one.
Well, no, I think. I don't know. I'm gonna keep an open mind. For me, to Jacob's point, it's more about just the stuff or just what comes around it. Like, there's always gonna be the first movie, and actually, I like the second movie as well. I love the real Ghostbusters, the cartoon show. That was what, you know. Again, I love the movie. I got the tape when I was 3 years old for the movie, but I watched the cartoon as well.
Over and over.
But it's so good. It holds up, the toys, everything. So it's, for me, at least, regardless of the movie, it's cool seeing, you know, Ghostbusters toys in the toy aisle. There's going to be Ghostbusters Twinkies, and Ecto Cooler is coming back, the high C drink.
Yeah.
But you can see that on the Goldbergs.
But I can drink it again. I haven't been able to drink it in 15 years, which people don't realize. Like, it was still on the shelves until like 2001. Like that drink outlasted the cartoon show, which it was based after, by like 9-10 years.
So is the drink good? Because if it was good, wouldn't it still be on the shelves?
I think eventually, because Slimer was on the box. It was Slimer, and it's called Ecto Cooler's Green. Once they stopped making Ecto Cooler, they still had the flavor, which is like the same thing for like another like 5 years, I think. It was like Shoutin' Tangerine or something like that. But it's a great jam. So I can imagine the taste in my head, and I can't wait to drink it. May 30th is supposed to come out. So,
you know, are you going to camp out at Target?
if they're doing something special like that, I absolutely would. I absolutely would.
Why not be a part of that? I mean, that's, I think people like to, you know, poke fun at like the people that would wait in line, and I'll be the first person to make fun of that too. But I don't know. There's something nice about being part of an experience like that.
It's fun.
If you're passionate about it, and, you know, whatever.
Well, usually it's just like hanging out with people like with a common interest, right? It's like when we used to hang out in line for Lost, it was just being able to hang out with people that loved Lost. So you just talk about
Lost. Those were cool people to hang out with. I don't know about hanging out with people trying to get first in line to get the Ecto Cooler.
Ecto Cooler. Just Ecto, get it right,
whatever it is. Like, oh, I got to get that drink. Oh, but like
when the Star Wars merch was released, they did it. It was Force Friday. Like, mm-hmm. I got in line and got some of my friends, and we kind of hung out in line. It was fun. Like, it was just a fun experience. Jacob, no, not so much.
With Star Wars?
Force Friday, yeah.
I didn't get to take part in Force Friday. It was cutting it too close to the holiday season, and I was trying to save my money for presents. I wanted to go out and buy everything, though. You know, and so just a quick thing. I actually had it written down. It's not Lost related, but it's back to the iconography kind of thing. It's something that I think is, you could argue for the hatred towards the prequels of Star Wars and the kind of love that people are given The Force Awakens, is that The Force Awakens has a lot more like iconic takeaways than the prequels did. Yeah. I can't think of a single thing from the prequels that I would pull out and, like, you know, put on a shirt or whatever. Maybe, you know, a couple things. But then Force Awakens gives us BB-8, which is a very unique, iconic new droid and all these things. So I think that JJ kind of honed in on that, had the right people working for him to create something that's just as iconic as some of the elements from the original trilogy.
But then I love like a move like on the Millennium Falcon, the radar dish got smashed off Return. So when they made the new one, it's rectangular versus the round, which again is just just a shape, but it sets the difference, like it sets the tone for it. Yes, it's the same universe, but we're in the future. You know, this is, the time is past. Just something as simple as a shape. Whereas if they kept it a round dish, it maybe wouldn't have made it feel like it was like time is past or whatever. So
right, yeah, exactly. Very, very intentional decisions, and I can't get enough of it. Love that stuff.
In the future, been more flat, less wind resistant.
Well, I was just saying, like it's thinner and it's kind of square, so
should it be like lower, like an arrow shape type thing.
Oh, there's no wind or drag in space.
Slowing you down. I'm looking.
Anyway. All right. Well, that is it for this week's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. Again, big thanks to Jacob for coming on the show and talking Lost iconography. A great discussion. And if anybody would like to send in what their top five or top, just say top your favorite icons from the show, you can call it in at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Calling time with your questions, comments, and or theories. Also, you can send an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, it's lostpodcast@gmail.com. For if you don't want to talk and you want to write, you can do that
for
through
you,
email.
For you people listening for the first time in a while, that number has changed.
It has changed. Yeah. 385 instead of 206.
Sorry, we lost that number and we couldn't get it back.
But you did get the 309. I think that's the most, that's the best part of that song is the 309.
0311?
So, call it. Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Nailed
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Are you guys from Seattle?
but yeah, so definitely send your feedback. It will be a new Lost Podcast 2 weeks from now. And we'll be releasing one from the vaults, and it'll be voted on by our patrons over on our exclusive Facebook page for our patrons. If you would like to join that page, contribute $5 or more at our Patreon page at patreon.com/JayandJack. For people that do $5 or more, you get access to the Facebook page as well as our Patrons' Choice monthly podcast. No, it's not Pastries' Choice. It's Patrons' Choice. Podcast. And last month, the listeners asked us to do a summer movie preview, and I think we broke down like 20 summer movies and our thoughts about them. So definitely check that out.
Two of which I'm going to see.
We want to send a special thanks from Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, and Brad from Chicago for contributing a significant amount to make these shows possible. If you'd like to become a patron, go to jayandjack.com. Click the link on Become a Patron. Also, we have a special promotion going on right now with Loot Crate. Loot Crate is an awesome program in which you can get delivered a box of geeky goodness to your door, whether it's T-shirts, pop vinyls, and more. $45.
Drinks from Ghostbuster.
Ecto cooler. I don't know. God, that would be awesome. They should do that. $45 worth of stuff for less than 20. Go to lootcrate.com/JayandJack. Put in promo code JayandJack. Get a special discount on your first box. All right, guys. That is it. Jacob, where can people find you? Time to plug away.
Plug, plug. Great. Well, as I said before, Master Thief is at spargames.com. That's a spar with two R's. I am on the social medias as Instagram. It's Jacob_Parr. Twitter, Jacob Parr. I finally got that one, just my full name. And my website, if anyone out there is looking to get some design work done, my website is jacobparr.design. So
nice,
all good stuff. And if you need a reference as to what I've done, the new Jay and Jack branding, I was very happy to do. That was a really fun project. So thank you guys for having me do that.
Thank you. Thank you for doing it. We would.
Thanks for kicking off the Summer of Lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our operations would seem a lot less professional if not for your.
I'm pretty good at stick figures. Somewhat.
It's been a pleasure.
Your fantastic design work has probably tricked a lot of people into listening to our shows that maybe would not listen to them otherwise. Thank you for that, and thank you for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun, and we'll probably maybe hopefully hear more travails on the Married Man show. As well.
Oh boy.
All right, so Jacob, thank you again, and we'll see everybody next time. If you we're doing a lot of shows right now, but Game of Thrones seems to be our big one. Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. It's been a lot of fun. If you listen, like when we first did it with just Jack and I, it was horrible. It was crap. Yeah. We deserved the one to two star reviews that we got.
Where can I get those? That first CG you guys did? No, I'm not.
You don't
telling
want
you
to. It's horrible.
I don't. I said I'm not telling you. I'm not.
But we restarted last year with Nick, and it's been a lot of fun because Nick knows his stuff. I love doing the podcast. I love just picking his brain to kind of find out more. So check that out. Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. You can subscribe to all of our shows on the JJ Wee feed. Jay and Jack, the whole enchilada.
Enchilada.
Speaking of iconography, that was one of my favorite ones that kind of came out of that.
The JJ Wee. That was fun.
The story there is originally it was your kind of really radically redesigned Ramblecast one, which is like JJRC. It's like I love the way that looks. And then we kind of repurposed it to JJ Wee, which I think is even cooler. But yeah. A little inside baseball there. All right. So we'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.